Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hey.
So.
What's up, Harry Winkler?
Henry Winkler.
Oh,
Henry Winkler.
Yeah, sorry. Henry. I said Harry Winkler.
Harry Winkler, yeah.
That sounds like a porn star name.
It does. No, Henry Winkler was the Fonz.
He was the Fonz.
Yeah, so. He was also on Arrested Development, which was funny.
Oh, man. Yeah, he was... Oh, what was his... He was the attorney.
Barry...
I just keep going back to Bob Loblaw.
Bob Loblaw's Loblog?
Yeah.
Lobbing law bombs. Yeah. Oh, that was Scott Baio, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Scott Baio.
That was genius.
God, that was so great.
It's like Barry Finkelstein or something.
Something like that, yeah.
I just remember he was always trying to go places and pick up dudes in the city of industry.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also remember the episode where he was going to do that, and then, like, they had the Ten Commandments statue, and it fell, and it crushed his car. And he was like, never mind. And then for, like, one episode, he was cool, but...
Yeah.
So, anyways...
How's it going, man?
It's going pretty cool. I can't complain.
Good. It's actually not very cool in this studio right now.
No, the studio is somewhere between 120 and the surface of the sun. Depending on the day it is. Today, it's around 100. No. It's, what do you think it is here? 85?
It's probably in the upper 80s in here right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because it's probably in the low 60s outside. It's just that this is a very small room in a very old house.
With two dudes in it.
With two dudes in it and blankets covering the windows.
Yeah. Maybe we need a better light. That light behind me seems to be putting off a lot of heat. It was just because it's behind me.
It might be that it's just kind of hovering over you.
I don't like it.
It's the only light I got, man.
I'm going to bring some LEDs in this thing here. Up in this.
What you been playing, Jason?
What have I been playing? Hey, I've been playing this game called Castle. It's called Castle with a subtitle of Infighting and Intrigue in the King's Court.
Oh, man, I'm excited already.
It's another one made by Descartes, distributed by Blue Games in the U.S., made by S. Laggett and B. Faduti. I think B is Bruno, because again, Brunos are huge.
They are.
Making things. So the purpose of this game, it's one of those games that's very simple rules.
Yep.
Purpose is, play the cards, either in, you've got this board that, board is a generous term. You have four strips of cardboard that make the outer walls of the castle.
Okay.
The strips of cardboard are not well thought out. They bend, they move. My wife and I, last time we played it, felt like they really should have made those with, like, puzzle piece ends so they could kind of interlock.
Sure.
It seems like that would have cost the same to do that, but would suck way less. But the game is a lot of fun. So the purpose is you've got this deck, you've got a hand of cards, and then you've got a stack of cards, your deck of cards. And the idea is to play all of them.
Okay.
And so the rules are, play the cards where they can be played. And each card can either be played in the courtyard, on the ramparts or the walls, in a tower, and there's a tower on each corner, or outside of the castle. And outside of the castle, they can be placed right next to the wall or anywhere outside of the castle.
Okay.
So in the courtyard, there's only 16 spaces. I believe there's also 16 spaces in the ramparts and then one in each of the towers. So there's four towers then, right?
Okay.
And what makes the game interesting is each card you want to play is a different character from a castle you've heard about. There's the king, there's the queen, there's his mistresses, the prince, an alchemist, there's a dragon, there's knights, there's captains, there's traitors, there's courtesans, ambassadors.
Courtesans?
Isn't it courtesan?
It's courtesan. Like courtesan? The chick who's all flirty and stuff. And like...
Courtesan?
Courtesan.
Courtesan?
Not cortisone.
It's not a Z. It's an S.
I think it's pronounced... Well, anyway. Whatever.
Okay. Chicks.
Chicks.
Ladies in waiting.
Yeah.
And each card says where it can be played. And then some of them are very easy, like in the courtyard. But some of them are next to the king. Mm-hmm. Some of them like the mistress says, cannot be played if the queen is in play. Which is funny, get it? Because she's the mistress.
She's the mistress.
And then every card when you play it has text at the bottom that tells you what happens when you play the card. A lot of them send cards back to your opponent's hand. And you've got these little tokens that you put on there.
Uh-huh.
You put it on your card when you play it. And then I can send cards back to your hand to try and stop you from getting out of all of your cards, right?
Okay.
But then, in addition to that, you can do things like some cards, when I play them, like a thief, it allows me to remove a token off a tile, mm-hmm. off a card. Why would you want to do that? Well, because, great, you move your token, and the card can't come back to your hand. It instead goes back to this thing called the exchange, which is this pool of cards you can throw your cards into and take cards out of. And it's face up, so everyone can always see what's in there.
Okay.
And it's pretty fun. It's, with two players, it's very, very high strategy. I mean, because you're trying to screw each other big time. The more players you have, the more luck-based it is.
Okay.
Because there's just more random cards as to who has what. It's easy that if I don't have the card, you must have it. You know? And if you've played the game a few times, you start to know what those cards are. So, if I don't have the mistress, and you do, well, darn it, I want to get the queen out as quickly as possible to stop you from playing the mistress. So
gotcha.
That type of thing.
Okay.
It's a fun game. It's got a good amount of replayability. But it is one of those games where it's different every time because the cards are different and the cards you have are different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same every time because there are fundamentally the same cards in the deck every time.
Yeah.
And you're playing them into the same space. So
gotcha. So kind of the outcome might be the same
right
in the end. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's one of those games we play once every few months.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Okay.
How about yourself? What have you been playing?
Well, it's not quite the kind of thing that we normally would hit up on this show, but I finally got around to trying Minecraft.
Minecraft.
Yeah, and it's stupid. I played it on my phone.
That is stupid, but you can do that because I'd probably play it on my phone.
Well, yeah, like Minecraft. People, I don't think I need to explain to people what Minecraft is.
Right.
I'm pretty sure the listeners are okay.
I mean, I've never played Minecraft, and I can tell you very lots of details about the game.
Right, me too. Yeah, I could have before I started playing this, right? So it's been a PC game for a long time. Just recently, I think just a week or two ago, it came out for Xbox, on Xbox 360. Wow. I'm actually pretty bummed because I'm a PlayStation man myself, and it's not on PlayStation. And from what I've read, it's not going to be on PlayStation.
Now, with the phone version, is that the full-on version?
Well, it's a mobile version. I mean, it is 3D. It's Minecraft. You're walking around in this 3D randomly generated landscape. You are hitting stuff with your pickaxe. As far as I can tell, it looks the same.
There's still monsters?
There's a creative mode where you can do anything you want, and then there's a standard mode where there are monsters and you can fight off monsters and stuff. And I guess there's crafting in it. See, I didn't buy the full version. What I bought, or what I downloaded onto my phone, was the demo version.
Oh, okay.
So it's, and the demo's free. I think the full version is like $7 for the phone. It's pretty cheap, you know?
Well, for a PC or Xbox game, that's cheap, but that feels expensive on a phone.
Well, I think the Xbox version it's a downloadable for Xbox Live. From what I understand, it's like $20.
Okay.
Which actually is a little high for an Xbox downloadable game. They're usually $10 to $15, is my understanding. Same thing with PlayStation small stuff is $10 to $15. Anyway, I think if you buy the full version on the PC, it's like $27, $28.
Oh, so it still is marked down for Xbox.
Yeah. I don't like it on my phone because the movement, you know, it's a first person game, right? And so moving, there are directional arrows on the screen for forward, back, and strafe left and strafe right, or sidestep, okay?
Right.
And then you touch the screen and move your finger around to change to look up, down, turn left, turn right, and that stuff, right? And then also, if you want to mine something, you know, if you want to hit it with your pickaxe, or if you want to place a block, you touch the spot on the screen, right? The problem is that the screen on a phone is not really big enough. Because when you put your finger there, your finger's in the way of whatever you're doing.
Right.
You can't really tell what you're doing, and that's frustrating. If I had a bigger screen on my phone, you know, if I had a 4-inch screen on my phone, maybe it'd be better. But I've got, maybe if I had a 5-inch screen, I've probably got about a 3.5-inch screen on my phone.
Yeah.
And it's just too small for it.
Right.
If it was available on iPad, it would probably work a lot better.
I wonder if it is.
It might be.
I'll have to check.
Because I have Android. Right. And if it's on Android, it's got to be on iPhone. It's got to be on iOS. So that means you could probably put it on your iPad. I don't see why not.
I'll have to try that.
Look for it. Yeah. But what it makes, what playing this, the demo version for free makes me just want to go spend the $27 to buy it on PC. Because I like it. I mean, it's hard to play. And the demo won't save your progress. But even sitting there, you know, playing that, I'll drain my battery in 2 hours, you know. But sitting there for, I think the most I've picked at it so far is for about 40 minutes straight. It was fun. It was fun. I liked it. It just sucks on the phone.
Right. I mean,
it's about as good as you could expect for a phone game, really.
Of course they were going to port it to the phone, right?
Because, right.
It's made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the stuff that I like about it is it's the freedom, you know?
The sandbox.
The sandboxy stuff, yeah. And I thought that we might as well let that move into our mechanic of the week here.
All right.
Is that sandbox idea, you know? Minecraft is just kind of barely a game, okay? And again, I'm speaking from the point of view of a guy who's only ever played it on his phone, the demo version, okay?
Right.
But we've all read plenty about it, so I think we probably know enough to be able to talk this in more general terms. It has crafting. You get resources and you build things. You build weapons and armor and you build different stuff, okay? So that's kind of a game sort of thing. There are monsters that you can fight. That's kind of gamey. But my understanding is that there's no real end game. There's no goal.
I think there is now.
Oh, is there now?
Because like my friends talked about playing together and beating a dragon or something.
Well, that could be.
But the premise, though, of the game really seems to be sandbox world. There are monsters. You do whatever you want to do. And you can even turn the monsters off with the creative mode.
Yeah. And in creative mode, you can fly and you can have unlimited resources to build stuff with and all that. And that's all available in the version that I played. So it had me thinking, you know, is something like that possible at all in a tabletop game?
Like that sandbox?
Yeah,
some kind of infinite mode, kind of?
Yeah. It is obviously not really, because you're going to be limited by pieces and limited by real physics and stuff, you know? Right. But is something like that by some degree possible in a tabletop game situation? And of course the first thing that came to my mind was Legos.
Yeah.
You know, because in a lot of ways Minecraft is kind of like virtual Legos.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah. And Lego came out, there's a whole series now, Lego board games.
Oh, okay. I know there's a lot of Lego video games as well.
Yeah, yeah.
People love.
Yeah. But you haven't seen the Lego board games?
No.
Okay. I demoed one or two of them at Gen Con a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
And you know, they're real simple. It's all for kids, you know, but they're simple board games. You know, you move your pieces around the board, or you have to go into the castle to find the mummy's treasure and that kind of stuff, or climb the pyramid. And part of the fun is that you build the board to play the game.
Okay.
You know, and you can move pieces around and you can disassemble stuff sometimes, and that's part of the game. And it's a cool idea. It's a cool idea to mix the creativity, the building of Legos, along with some kind of a game structure. But is there a way to take that further?
I would say, to a point, a tile game might be the best chance for that. Only because, I mean, you'd have to have a lot of tiles, right? To make it.
Yeah.
But if a tile game was kind of your base, that would mean that the board... But then again, maybe just do an extra-sized board game and make it empty. Just make it squares. Like a huge board game, right?
Mm-hmm.
The board. But it's just all the same size squares across the whole thing. So that kind of gives you a unit of measure. And on there, you stack other things. I don't know what, but...
What if you did that? What if you did that as a large play mat, that it was dry erase.
Yeah. Like, you know, the Chessex ones, they always have at Gen Con. Those. Yeah. And you can get some that are freaking huge.
Huge,
like,
yeah, yeah.
4x8 or something right. like that. It's crazy.
So what if you had something like that? I think the Chessex ones are actually wet erase, but either way.
Right. Yeah.
You had some kind of a play mat with a grid on it, and the game was, you know, in fact, you might even be able to put this together just as a rule set that you would just release for people to use on their own, using their own equipment, their own Chessex play mat that they might have, and
right,
whatever
right.
markers they have around the house. Some kind of rule set that would allow players to creatively design their own game, maybe. Design their own board to then play on.
There's, Daniel Solis has a game called Utara, I think.
Okay.
Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but I think it's Utara. I think you draw your own, like, islands and stuff. I've only seen him talk about it in his blog and stuff. I've never actually seen him play it at Gen Con. I know he has it with him there. I think he said last year, but yeah, that I think is that type of thing where you're drawing, because I thought he said you can play it on any surface.
Hmm.
So.
Okay.
And he did a write-up about it, if he was going to do a Kickstarter for it, for like letting people name islands and stuff, and I was like, that would be awesome.
Hmm. Interesting. So you don't know what the structure of that is, though?
No, I know that the dice have like directions on them, I think.
Okay.
And you're trying to like go from islands and do stuff, I think, but unfortunately, I apologize, I don't know a ton about it, but I think it's the same type of setup where it's kind of a sandbox style.
Yeah.
I actually forgot about that when you first mentioned that until just now.
Okay.
But
interesting. That I'd be interested to see what that's all about then. Because there could be potential there. That the point of the game is for the players to make their own play surface. And then... So you could... If you want to sell something, you could sell rules. You could sell dice to go with it. You could sell game pieces. But that might be better off just to say, use your own materials, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could almost just sell dice to go with it.
Yeah.
So,
right.
If that was the only difference, you know what I mean? Or dice and game pieces, and then, yeah, you just got your big board and...
Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's... It's an interesting idea to, like, can you capture that in a game?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in a tabletop game.
In a structured thing like that.
With an RPG, obviously, that's pretty much the point.
Right.
But,
Yeah, RPGs are essentially combat systems. They're decision-making engines, I guess.
Right, that's a good way to put it. Decision-making engines and then the sandbox world that you and your GM invent, so...
Yeah.
No, that's interesting to think about that. I like that. I really like that idea.
I do too.
I like you. I play a good deal of video games, not a ton, but on my phone especially. That's kind of in the iPad as well.
Yeah.
And I've got a game that I won't pitch today, but later on that is based on, you know, can you create this style of mechanic in a board game world rather than a video game world?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, there are two different things, but there's a lot of opportunities to where they can cross.
Yeah.
So. Because there's a reason that video games are fun, and there's mm-hmm. a reason that board games are fun, and some of those reasons kind of fall into the Venn diagram of each other.
Right? Yeah, right, so. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. I didn't really have a specific point to make with that, asking about that mechanic. I just thought it might be an interesting thing to discuss.
No, I think it's a great thing to think about.
It
would be interesting to try and just think of a game where you can make that work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'll look up Utara and I'll look in the show notes for everybody.
If we can find something, yeah, that'd be great.
Just because I know he has write-ups on his website about it, so
mm-hmm.
I'll link that in the show notes. Or you can just go to danielsolis.com and find it yourself. But mm-hmm. I will link it in the show notes.
Okay.
So.
Interesting. Well, moving on then. Our next thing here is practicing the pitch, and I believe, Jason, it is your turn.
That it is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's funny you talked about building your own game board, because that is a little bit as to what this game has to do with. So, the game is called Par for the Course,
ooh.
And it's a competitive miniature golf game.
Right? Oh, a golf pun.
So, yes. Don't mock me. I picture this as a family-style game. Nothing too complex.
Yeah.
But the basis of the game are, it's a tile-based game. And in the goal of the game is to play either a 9-hole or an 18-hole miniature golf game, depending on how long you want the game to be. Your choice.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamental of the game is everybody draws several tiles for okay. their... They would have kind of a pool of tiles they would draw, and they would hold on to those, and then they would play those out to... depending on the number of players you had, that would determine how many tiles you each got to play
okay.
per game. There would be a starting tile and an ending tile, and I'm thinking it might be cool if there were 9 starting and ending tiles. And you could randomize those, but mm-hmm. you were guaranteed that there would always be a starting... And actually, the starting tile could always just be a base tile that's the same. It's like the tee off, right?
Sure.
And then you could have between 9 and 18 different ending tiles with like the hole at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then each player plays a set number. Say it's 2 players, it would probably be 3 or maybe 4 tiles in between to make your hole, right? For the miniature golf hole. And then you have to putt through that hole. And then the scorekeeping is easy. It's golf, right?
Yeah.
Low man wins. To make that more interesting, each tile has something on it, whether it's a downhill slope or it's flat or it's a curve. And then each tile has a number on the tile. That number generally, like a flat tile that just was like a straightaway would be a 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was a downward slope, it might be a -1 or a -2. If it was an uphill slope, it could be a +1 or a +2. Maybe it's like a fun house, right? And you got to go through it, or it's like some funky obstacle, you know?
Okay.
And that's maybe a +5. So what you're doing is you're rolling dice. I'm thinking 1d6 you would roll, and that you're rolling that to putt through, right?
Okay.
So you roll that. What's my total? It's 6. So you need to, like, how? So then you do the math, basically, right? Like,
so you,
1 off the putting green.
Yeah.
And then... What's the next tile saying? The next tile is a +2, so there's now it's 3. But the next one's a downward slope, it's a -1, so you're back to 2. And you just go through to see how far your ball gets. And you'd have to have little ball markers that would be part of it. To spice it up, I thought it would be cool if you had characters. And we talked about this before, I love character cards.
Yeah.
If you had a character with, say, 6 or 7 cards they could play, this is one way. Two ways we could do it. One, you've got a character, and they've kind of got a set deck, right? Of, like... of their hitting, like, oh, power hit or strategic hit, right?
Yeah.
And that you can use to, you can use those to assist you on each hole, right?
Uh-huh.
So that you could do it that way, or you could just have a deck, and mm-hmm. you're drawing from the deck, and, you know, you play them as you go. So, yeah, it could go either way. I like it both ways. But each character, the one thing that would be cool if it was a theme is, right, each character would be, you know, you've got the nerdy dude who's like the geometry guy, right? So he gets a huge bonus for the really difficult stuff. Or maybe there's your big power hitter. So on straightaways, he does awesome,
mm-hmm.
right? Or there's your finesse guy who does really well on curves. You know what I mean? Like, so everybody's kind of got their own bonus. And you can just make those equal out. I don't think it would be that difficult in a game like that to make those be pretty much equal.
That would probably be pretty manageable, I would think. So the point is that you want to get, when you're rolling the die, you want to get the exact total of that it takes to get to the hole.
Well,
because if you roll too high, you're going to overshoot it.
Right. So the chances of you getting to it on the, because I would say on each stroke you can probably only play 1 card, right? So like when you roll the D6, you could play 1 of your cards to modify that, plus okay. whatever your. I thought that you could do it two ways. If you were going to have a deck of cards that everyone shares,
mm-hmm.
then you probably should have some bonuses right on your character.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do a set deck for each character,
mm-hmm.
then those just get represented in the cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big sluggo guy gets a power shot, and he can play that, and it adds like +4.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, a straightaway, it adds a +4. So, yeah, the idea is that you want to putt through and get the numbers, and wherever you... end with the number, you stop there. And then, yeah, there'd have to be a mechanic for the hole. I'm thinking you'd have to get within 1 or 2 of that. Otherwise, you overshoot it and you're still on that tile. And then you need to again get... Like, so if that hole, that last hole tile,
yeah.
is a 2, right? It's a 2. You're going to roll your dice, and you're going to need to get within 2 of that 2 to putt in. Does that make sense?
I think so.
So...
Okay.
And then just like miniature golf, you could have the six, right? The six is the maximum score.
So, yeah.
And then you would, I think another thing to add would be like a tracking pad might be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
To track what people's score was.
Yeah.
And then it would say what the par was. So what's cool about with it saying what the par is you could technically play it as a solo game if you wanted.
Yeah.
Or even a team game where you're just trying as a group to beat par by a certain number.
Oh, that would work. Yeah. So, oh, I like that. You know, that I'd like to, I like, I'm happy to hear you say that, that a game that could be both competitive or, you know, all three things, competitive, cooperative, and a solitaire game, I that's a rare thing.
Right. And I agree.
I think that's cool if a game can do all three of those things. Especially a solitaire situation.
Right. You know? And, you know, I think solitaire games are a really neat idea. And the idea that, you know, a game like this, you could do that because you've got your set scores, right?
Yeah.
And you just want to try and beat that score.
Yeah.
You're going for your personal best, right? So you pick your favorite character and you, and otherwise I envision the characters would just be randomly given at the end of the, at the beginning of the game.
Sure.
Unless people all decided like, oh, I really like this person, you mm-hmm. know? But the other thing is if I look at the guy with the big buff dude who just hits really hard, and I've got the dude who's really good at the tricks, mm-hmm. right? When I have that tile in my hand, when I have the funhouse tile, right?
Yeah.
I want to play that because it's going to screw him and help me.
Right.
So there could even be a system where you can exchange, like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, okay, so you draw, say, six tiles, right? So you've got six or seven tiles in your hand at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that hole, you can choose to dump some of your tiles to get new ones, like Scrabble style, right?
Okay.
So you would throw your tiles maybe into a junk area.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the main tiles run out, we'd mix those back up. But by doing that, I could try and force so that, like, if I'm the Power Shot guy, I can force so that the funhouse doesn't come up. I could throw it to the... Oh, actually, or maybe I want to hold on to it, right? Mm-hmm. Because I want to hold on to it so that no one can ever play it. But if I discard it back into the pile, then anyone could play it. So...
Okay.
What might be nice, I think, speaking of Scrabble, would be to have a bag to go with that.
To draw the tiles out of?
Yeah, that way no one can see... What tiles you're throwing back in.
Yeah, now you're only, you're playing one hole on the table at a time, right?
Yes.
See, in my mind, that makes me feel like I would want bigger tiles. I might want, like, 3-inch square tiles, you know?
I was thinking 2-inch square tiles.
2-inch square tiles.
Because I think that's kind of standard size.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking that, you know, if this is the only thing that's going to be on the table while you're playing... You don't want it to be this little thing that's 6 inches long, you know?
No. But yeah. If it's, you figure if you're each playing three tiles, or four tiles, we'll say. Mm-hmm. We'll say three if you're a two-player game, right? There's eight tiles out there.
Yeah.
So two-inch tiles, that's a pretty long
thing.
That's
true, yeah. That's, yeah, okay.
And I'm thinking that once those tiles are played, you take all those and you junk them. You throw them off to the side, and they're not going to get put back in.
Okay.
That way, you know, if the funhouse comes up, funhouse only comes up once.
Yeah.
So
maybe the loser gets to be is allowed to whoever lost that hole is allowed to take one tile to put back in their hand, or put back in the pool or something.
That could be
rather than junk it.
That's true.
So it gives the loser a chance to hopefully help him the next time around.
Right, and then I like the idea of having a set end tile for every hole.
Yeah.
That way you can make those different difficulties. I mean, you've been at your golf before, right?
Yeah.
Sure. So, you know, sometimes maybe the hole slopes down in, right? So it makes it pretty easy to hit it, right?
Sure.
Other times, like, it's like volcano style, where you gotta, like, run up this stupid hill to get it to drop in.
Sucks.
Yeah, it's terrible. I hate those. So, you know, based on that, it can make a big difference for the difficulty level of the hole.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah.
And, you know, what's cool is it's a game that's simple enough that I think kids could play it.
I think so.
And it encourages math, right?
Uh-huh.
Because you'd be doing a little bit of math.
Sure does.
On there, so.
It's, one thing that I think is appealing about it is that it's familiar. You know, everyone has played mini golf before, you know?
Right.
It's a familiar thing. I think it's easy to... If you can show somebody this and you can say, hey, they can look at that on the table and say, oh, that's a miniature golf course instantly.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
It's an easy sell. It's an easy pitch to somebody. Say, hey, you can play mini golf at home.
Yeah.
You know, just with some cards.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah. I think that's that's a real strength for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right. That's a plus.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people will recognize. It's already familiar to them, so you don't have to sell them on the concept. Which is one of the problems that I might have, like with that wormholes idea that I pitched last week.
Right.
You know, or with some of the other ideas I'll bring up down the road on later right. episodes.
And we've talked about that too with approachability of a game. You know, right. If you pick a theme that's popular, like, you know, we talked about my zombie card game idea. Mm-hmm. You know, people like zombies. So if you like zombies, you're automatically going to say, hey, that looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, but if you hate zombies, you're going to be like, eh.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of
zombies. But most gamers are okay with zombies in general. So. Right. Yeah, so that's my idea for par for the course.
Par for the course. I like it. I think that's a good one. I think that might be my favorite of what you pitched so far.
All right. Well, I still think I like the bike messaging game a little bit.
That is good though. Yeah, that's fun.
I was gonna say for par for the course, something that would be has really in its favor is artwork.
Yeah.
Like you said with the wormholes game.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of different cards you need, because basically your square tile is going to curve, it's going to you know what I mean, it's going to do whatever.
Yeah,
it's not going to do anything that drastic to where you can't just line another tile up to it.
Right. Right, that's true.
And you just have to have so many things, like the fun houses and the you know, the Ferris wheels and stuff that are in your way, and then 18 different holes. But I mean, even the holes, really, we're not talking a ton of major artwork. You know what I mean? It's not like people are doing Rembrandts here to do it.
Yeah, it could be easy, cartoony, kind of low-stress stuff, yeah.
And the same, too, with the character cards, you know? Yeah. Like, you've got your dude, and it's just kind of a fun, cartoony feel to it. Because I think, it wouldn't be a kid's game, but I would want to emphasize that it's very accessible to family.
Yeah.
Because if that's a strength for the game, why absolutely. Not?
Yeah, right? It totally is, yeah. Yeah, I support that.
Cool.
Yeah, good that's, stuff, man.
So that's my pitch.
Okay.
Well, that went really fast.
It sure did. Yeah, we're having a quickie episode here, I guess.
So, yeah. Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say about the game. I'm struggling to. I'm trying to think, like, and then there's going to be lightning bolts or something, you know?
Yeah, what kind of lightning bolts?
And then people can cast magic missile.
Magic missile.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Lightning bolt. So the game, though, that could be a good idea for a first game. Because it's pretty simple, it's pretty accessible.
Yeah.
Probably fairly Kickstarterable, if that's a word.
It is now. It is. It has become one in our culture.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right on. Well, I guess we should move on to our plugs for this evening.
Plugs.
What do you want to plug tonight?
Me. Oh, you always make me go first.
I can go first if you'd rather.
What's with that? Like,
I'm the host. Well, we're both hosts, but I'm the one who does all the talking.
Right, so you're always like, what are you going to plug?
Yeah.
What are you going to plug?
I'm trying to help the thing move forward.
Do you have a plug in your head?
I do have a plug in my head.
Do you?
I do.
I don't know that you do. Just for the listeners here, we sometimes struggle with plugs. There are sometimes we have a bunch of stuff we want to plug, and other times we have less stuff we want to plug.
And we spend so much of the rest of the show talking about other games and things that we feel like we kind of don't want to keep talking about the same stuff.
Right, so we like to try and plug something new, and maybe something we're familiar with that we know from somewhere. Nice, nice.
That was my phone pinging. I'm real sorry about that.
It's not tacky at all that your phone just went off.
Sorry. I apologize.
So what do you want to plug?
Well, I've got a buddy of mine. His name is Eric Van Singel, and he does comics. And you can see his comics by going to ericvansingel.com. That is ericvansingel.com.
Way to not screw that up.
Yeah, ericvansingel.com. His webcomic, I believe it's called Here at the Dude Ranch, or excuse me, Here at the Art Ranch, I believe is what it's
think
called.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah. It's I've known Eric for at least 10 years. And I've collaborated with him on some art projects in the past. We've done comics together. We've done a lot of projects. Eric's he's a comic artist. He's a painter. He's a musician. He's kind of a creative person of all sorts.
Yes.
And he's got this kind of ongoing saga of his fictitious life at the art ranch in the desert with Texas Bo, who's a blue dog. And Bird, who's a big parrot, and how they are the trials and tribulations of their life on the Dude Ranch, or the Art Ranch. I keep
calling. You really want to call it a Dude
Ranch? Well, because the old version of the comic used to be called Here at the Dude Ranch, and now that he is a character in his own comic, he's entered into the world. He's kind of merged these two different web comics he's done in the past into one.
I see.
Because he started with Here at the Dude Ranch, which was Texas Bo and Bird, and Andy the Lemur, and
none of those things except for the dog sound like something you would see at a Dude Ranch.
You know what? Maybe no. I'm sorry. Bird isn't in Art Ranch now. It's Juniper the horse.
See, that makes more sense for ranch.
Yeah.
Horse.
Yeah. So Bird isn't in this one anymore. I'm sorry. Anyway, so he's got this webcomic that he just kind of follows the saga of these characters lost in this strange, surreal world. And it's a fun thing. It's kind of quirky. I really dig his art style a lot. It's real, it's just kind of real natural and real free form. It's not too polished, which I appreciate about his style. And I'm a big fan. He's a good friend of mine, and you should check it out. EricVanSingle.com.
Nice. Yeah. I will check that out. I'm just pretending. I've already read it before.
I figured.
So. Yeah. I've known Eric for probably 7 years.
Yeah, it's almost as long as I have. Yeah.
So what am I gonna plug now? See, so I'm gonna plug somebody I follow on Twitter who's a cool lady. Her name is D20 Blonde. So that's at D20 Blonde with an E on the end of blonde. I think you can spell blonde both ways. Is that true?
Yeah, however you want. I don't care.
I don't know. Maybe not. There's an E on the end.
I'm not a blonde, so I don't have an opinion.
It's true. She hosts this Twitter feed show called RPG Chat, which is just hashtag RPG Chat, all one word, of course, with a hashtag. And Thursdays at 9, she interviews different people or just talks about certain topics, and everybody can chime in and ask questions with using the hashtag. And so I encourage you to follow her. Okay. and check that out. It's a good time. She has some good people on there, mm-hmm. know, and it's just cool that you can ask questions and.
I've never heard of that, having a Twitter show before. That's a new idea to me.
I mean, I might just be making the word show up for Twitter. I don't know what she would call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's like a chat time on Twitter.
It's chat time where everybody's talking about the same topic.
Yeah. It's okay. Like if somebody was all watching the same TV show and talking about it, except for it's interactive because,
you know, gotcha.
Twitter chat, I don't know, whatever you
want to
call it.
Well, I don't know what to call it, yeah. Okay, so. That sounds interesting, though. I don't know how I would keep track of that. Can you set your Twitter stuff to just automatically report any specific hashtag to you?
You can. Okay. Or you can just, if you follow her too, she'll pop in your timeline and then you can just hit when that hashtag comes up.
Okay.
And I've got my phone, I'll set it and I'll just follow the hashtag as it goes. And
gotcha.
Yeah. I've never asked questions or anything. I've just read through some of the stuff. And it's cool just because you get a lot of people chiming in.
Yeah.
And it's got kind of a sense of community with a lot of people talking and stuff. And I think that's cool, you know, because it's one of the cool things about Twitter in general.
Yeah.
Right, is, you know, people are hashtagging like a TV show they're watching, and you know, everybody's cracking jokes about it and stuff, and that's fun. So,
yeah, I've been on Twitter for a couple of years now, but I still am kind of a novice, I guess.
It shows in your tweets.
I'm really bad at it. I'm bad at shortening URLs. I'm bad at abbreviating. Yeah.
Well,
it's the writer in me. I don't like to shorten things.
I'll be honest. I've been terrible at URLs in general, and then I figured out on a website that thing I showed you where you can just click and it just gives you the short link, and that's like the greatest
thing
goodness.
Ever. Thank goodness. So,
but you know what the best thing you can do on Twitter is?
What's that?
Ampersand.
Ampersand.
Saves you two spaces.
Good call. Yeah.
I say and a lot. I feel like so. Yeah.
Say it too much.
I think
you need
so.
To cut out the ands.
So I use, do you compose a tweet and it's too long, and then you go back and analyze it slowly?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So I do that a lot.
Yeah.
How can I keep the spirit of what I'm trying to say in 140 characters? That's lame.
It's modern.
I bet everybody does it, though. So.
Modern poetry.
Is that what you're calling it, modern poetry?
Well, isn't that kind of what it is? It's the modern haiku, man.
140 characters.
Yeah, you know, you're trying to express yourself in some kind of restricted way.
That's true. Somebody pointed out to me, some famous person tweeted, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they said, thinking about it, in China, you get 140 words. Because if each character is a word, then...
I think they use Roman characters, though. And,
oh, do they?
Well, China doesn't allow Twitter anyway, because they're communists.
Yeah. You won't be hearing this show in China since Rob just
No, seriously. No, but like Twitter is verboten in China, and I know that's German. Verboten in China. Yeah, no, Twitter is forbidden in China.
Ixnay on the Itertway. That's Pig Latin, so.
In China. In Inache. Yeah, no, right. Yeah, seriously, though, the government does not allow Twitter, much like they don't allow Facebook and MySpace and all that stuff. It's all,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
You gotta find ways around it. The Chinese people do anyway.
Do they allow podcasts?
I don't know. I don't think we're going to have a lot of Chinese listeners. Hey, listeners, if you're Chinese, let us know that we're wrong, please.
And if you are listening in China, anywhere in China, please let us know that we are wrong.
Likewise, if in any way, shape, or form we've just been offensive or anything, we sincerely apologize. We're just idiots and we don't know any better.
Yeah.
Wow. Chinese Twitter.
On that note, I'm going to go home and Google
Chinese Twitter,
because I'm curious now.
I think they use Roman characters.
I thought that they said they had a different thing they used in China.
They might have Chinese version of Twitter that's not called Twitter.
I thought they had the same for Facebook, unless I'm thinking of Japan.
I don't know.
There was a country in Asia that had their own version of some big social media site that was like number one there. It wasn't Facebook, so that was the news.
Kim Jong Il book?
I don't think it's called Kim Jong.
You're right. It'd be Kim Jong Un. Book, wouldn't it? Because he's the guy.
Kim Jong-un, I saw a headline at one point that read, Kim Jong-un dead? ? But when you look at it, it said, Kim Jong-un dead. And that was funny to me. Because it said undead.
I like that. One of my favorite Tumblrs is Kim Jong-il looking at things. Have you ever seen that?
I've seen that one, yes.
It's so great. So great.
Another Tumblr that's really funny is Nick Cage as Everyone.
Oh, I don't know that
You've
one.
Never looked at that
no,
one?
No, I'm going to look at that.
Guess what we'll be doing when this show is over. Right.
Well, we should end this, though.
All right. Yeah, we're rambling here.
Yeah, so. We are going on. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to Building the Game. Please come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy, stupid, insane...
insensitive...
journey of becoming game designers. Thanks for listening. See you later. Sad there. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Somebody today said we should have a video podcast.
That person's an idiot.
I said, there is no way, because not only are we not that photoable. What's the word for that?
Photogenic.
But again, Snuggies on the wall. And after the Snuggies, all there are is skulls everywhere.
I like skulls.
Weird. You've been listening to Building the Game, a proud sponsor of the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social.
Are you going to Gen Con and want to hang out with your favorite podcasts and friends? Come to the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social for dinner and a party on Thursday, August 16th.
Find out more details and get your tickets before they're sold out at GenConSocial.com.